Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to It's Finally Football Season. It's finally August. And oh, by the way, I turned 30 in less than 48 hours. Luke, how are you?
Not going through the third life crisis you are, but I'm doing okay.
So it's starting to hit me a little bit that I turn 30 and I don't have that two in front of my age anymore. And then I think about what I do for a living, which is talk to, if we're just going to be frank and blunt with it, I talk to teenage boys and then I talk to 40 to 55 year old men about them. It's a strange profession. We've talked about that in numerous different times at this podcast. Yeah.
I've mocked you endlessly.
And yes.
I think you can finally say I think where it gets really creepy now is you can say, I talk to, boys half my age.
I had literally not thought of that. And now I am rubbing my temples incredibly, incredibly vigorously. Yeah. Welcome to turning 30. So that'll be a lot of fun. But what I hope is going to be a lot of fun this season, Luke, is hopefully this Gopher football team, which before we get into some things, I think we should start with a little housekeeping note about potentially advertising. And then I want to kind of get into how I voted on that Cleveland.com poll. But okay. Luke, I think you have something that you want to tell the people.
Oh, well, so more or less, we do have sponsors. The Goal Line Club is going to be back. They're going to sponsor our season previews and breakdowns again. But we do have sponsor slots available. If you're interested in doing that, especially here with the preview episodes, do reach out to us. Slip into the GGR DMs. Let us know if you're interested. We're going to be transparent. We are an independent media. We are independent media, right, Ryan? It's you and I.
Contrary to what some other fans may think about our viewpoints, we are independent media, yes.
Yeah, but we're not backed by anybody but ourselves. Nobody pays us to do this. We do it on our own. We do it for fun. But we actually have a good number of people that listen. So because we're independent, we're actually going to be a little bit more transparent this season about how episodes do and how engagement is. So if you're interested in sponsoring, our season previews tend to be some of our highest listened to episodes. They're not our highest listened to episodes, but they tend to be on average some of the highest. They tend to do over 5,000 listens an episode. So if you're interested in reaching a demographic that is largely based in the Twin Cities, largely a younger demographic, reach out to us. Let us know. We do have a good spread. 11% women, that we grew that drastically last year. Thank you, ladies, for joining and listening to the podcast. But if you're interested in sponsoring or advertising on our podcast going forward, let us know. So that's our shameless plug. Reach out in the DMs.
Yeah. Again, we would love to have you guys. We do what I think is insane numbers. As Luke said, 4,000 or 5,000.
Well, given that we don't compromise to get, go for the kind of average fan. Yeah, we do really impressive numbers given the fact that we go pretty deep and
we go deep into the weeds. We go chest high weeds. Like I was out in the deer woods like I was today.
For instance, if this is your first time listening to an episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio, just let you know, Ryan's going to go about three deep on the offensive line, and these are going to be some names that aren't going to play this year. So,
well, that's also the beauty of Gopher Illustrated, where, yes. Oh, by the way, Luke, we're going to be having a fall camp sale starting on my birthday, August 5th, running it through the 8th. I believe it's going to be 50% off for annual subscriptions. That's 60-something bucks off. It's for new members. It's also for you monthly members who actually want to get some bang for your buck. So, again, with the season just around the corner here, if you want to help support what I do, make sure that the Gophers actually have a full-time dedicated beat writer. That's kind of what it's going to be at Gopher Illustrated. It's what it is. I got an Ask Ryan Burns thread, which is almost at 2 million views, which is incredible to me. I mean, our football recruiting thread for the 23 class here is at 1.33 million. I mean, there's a lot of people on that site. And if you're a Gopher fan that has always wanted to give it a shot and you like to save money, oh, by the way, me, I like to save money, Luke. Do you like to save money?
Yeah, occasionally I like to save money. So,
well, especially when you're paying for a wedding that's now almost less than 5 months away, which is also starting to terrify me. But enough about my midlife crises. Check out Gopher Illustrated this weekend. I'll be at practice on Saturday. There is an open Gopher football practice to both the media and the fans at Huntington Bank Stadium this weekend. It's going to be at 2 p.m. So if you want to bring the kids, bring yourself, bring whomever, and come check out the team. I'll have photos. I'll have practice reports up. And allegedly, the media is going to get two, if not three more practices that they're going to grace us in attending at some point here in August. So there's going to be a lot more going on, but 50% off at Gopher Illustrated this weekend.
All right. So let's just chat now about Cleveland.com, which you have educated me is a little bit bigger than TwinCities.com. So these are newspapers, I'm assuming. I just think the URLs are interesting. I actually think that the folks over at the Pioneer Press do a great job. I just think it's funny that their domain name is TwinCities.com. But okay, tell me and educate the people about the Cleveland.com. What is it again? Cleveland.
It's so, Luke, for those of you who aren't diehards like maybe some others are, the 12th annual Cleveland.com preseason Big Ten media poll.
Yeah.
Essentially, there was 36 writers, I think one or two or three from each team that were asked for some. This is how it works. Like for something like this, I just got an email. Never, don't even know how they got it. Don't know how they contacted me, but I got to vote on this, and that's where I've been talking with our guy Jeffrey the Greek from the Eyes on Big Ten podcast.
Who, good podcast, again, by the way. Yeah,
I think it's the best Big Ten overall football podcast out there.
Yes,
and, you know, I think they do a fantastic job over there, and that's where I was able to vote on it this year. And I've been struggling, and I've been talking with Greek about it. That you look at the way that people voted for the West this year, and we'll get into it in a couple weeks. And really in deep into the weeds when we do our game-by-game predictions, but 31 of 36 votes went to Wisconsin to win the West, and that is absolutely mind-boggling to me. It just frustrates me to no end, not because I don't think Wisconsin doesn't have a legitimate chance to win the West. They absolutely do.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote about it, and I'm sure some of you read it. You know, I picked Minnesota to win the West. Shocking. Yes, the guy.
The Minnesota beat writer.
Yeah. And I was one of two people, so there was another person out there with me that did it. But it was just more so like I could flip a coin between Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota this year to win the West. I really could. And I just think that it's just a disservice that 31 of 36 people just – yep, Wisconsin. Yep, so, that's going to be them.
So let me just give my opinion here, because I think you're wise in, like, you know, playing the kind of contrarian card here a little bit. But from my standpoint of this, like, these polls typically are based on very little intel and information, right? That's kind of my assessment. And so then people go back to, like, okay, well, who traditionally wins it? Well, Wisconsin, Iowa, you know, will win it from time to time as well. And then even a little bit more or a little bit less often, Northwestern will pop up one year and win. Now, I get why people are picking Wisconsin, but y'all, have you paid attention in the last 3 years? I mean, Northwestern did win one of the years, but like it's come down like to the last weekend between Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin, right? In last year, it literally came down to the last weekend where Iowa had to, you know, come back against Nebraska. They won, and then Minnesota had to beat Wisconsin, and Iowa won the Big Ten West. Like, it's not that crazy for one of these three teams and maybe someone else to have a chance at this. Should Wisconsin have a slight favorite, like maybe a little bit over a third? Yeah, but like the drastic swing to Wisconsin.
Why would you say that?
Well, what I'm saying, like my point is not, I'm more agreeing with you. Like I could understand more people being lazy, right? And just like picking Wisconsin, but like literally greater than 80% picking Wisconsin. That's the thing that's staggering to me.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating part. Because, again, and I wrote about it. You can read it. It's all over my Twitter. People hate it. People love it. Again, I like to go deep into the weeds. If you haven't figured that out by the many years of this podcast, I love to do my research on something because I feel like if you're going to have an opinion, especially one that potentially matters to people, you better have something to back it up besides trying to be clickbaity Star Tribune guy. Like, and so that's where I went into it, and that's where it's – you look at the crossover games even this year. Minnesota avoids Michigan and Ohio State. Iowa's got both, and Wisconsin's got to travel to the horseshoe. Now, I'm not telling you that Penn State and a whiteout's going to be a cakewalk or even going into East Lansing at the late part of September against a team that won 10 games last year is going to be easy. But it's certainly easier than what I think going to play Michigan or Ohio State is, because I think those two teams are in a tier by themselves in the Big Ten. And again, I even look at the offenses, and for as much hate as Tanner Morgan gets, and look, he's an average quarterback, and it's okay to be that, but that's where Spencer Petras from Iowa and Graham Mertz from Wisconsin were legitimately horrible last year. And our guy Stats of War, shout out to him. Again, I love to use expected points added, which is what I think is the best quarterback stat, and that's where it's Tanner Morgan was 57th out of 130 quarterbacks. Again, average, maybe slightly above average. Mertz and Petras, 121, 122 out of 130. Wisconsin's got four brand new starters on the offensive line, just like Minnesota does. Wisconsin loses their top three pass catchers. Minnesota returns their top five. I would put Braylon Allen and Ches Malusi from Wisconsin against Mo Ibrahim and Trey Potts from Minnesota. Like, Graham Mertz is still throwing passes for Wisconsin. And oh, by the way, it's a brand new coordinator. Like, what are we?
Yeah, and he's boom or bust, right? Like, it's been more bust. It's
so frustrating to see. I mean, how many of these people in the media do you think legitimately just went, all right, let's pull up 2021 Big Ten West standings into Google, copy and paste. Do some research about what it's just. It's frustrating for me.
I appreciate how seriously you take your job.
Well, if I don't, I mean, what are we even doing here? So I'll step off my soapbox now, but it's just, if you're going to do things like even as maybe, minuscule as what this Cleveland.com poll is, please at least do a little research about the schedule, who's returning what, how it kind of sets up. Again, that's where it was a little frustrating for me.
Yeah, I understand that you feel attacked because you're so far an outlier, and I appreciate you standing on the hill and protecting yourself. I'm with you though. I just don't understand how there's not more weight, like more evenly distributed. Like, I'm not trying to say that Minnesota should have been picked outright, but I would think that it should be a little bit more even.
Just even say, like, Iowa only gets three votes of that?
Yeah, like, that's ridiculous.
That's insane. That is insane. Like, there's a lot of things I think working against Iowa this year.
And how does nobody pick Northwestern?
But how does Iowa and Minnesota combine for five first-place votes?
Yeah, but, like, how does – I mean, precedent shows us that Northwestern is likely to win the Big Ten this year because they were literally last year, right? Like – there is precedent for that. So if we're looking back at previous standings, I don't know. I'm being facetious, but you get my point. So
yeah, I get what you're saying. Again, it's just look at now that we're especially now, we are so close to the season starting. We are less, what are we, 4 or 5 weeks away. All these beat writers are going to be getting to know their team. It's now what I love to call, if you don't follow the NFL beat writers, every NFL team this time of year, every player is in the hashtag best shape of their life.
Yes.
It's the season of optimism. I get it. It's that time of year, but also again, that's where if we just look at it through the same colored glass, there is no possible way you can tell me that if this Big Ten West division has played out 100 times this fall, Wisconsin's going to win. like Wisconsin's not winning 85% of the time. There is just no possible way in my mind.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it all kind of plays out. We'll see how training camps continue to go here. Minnesota just started theirs on August 1st. So we'll see who's healthy and who's not by the time the Fighting Jerry Kills come to town.
All right. So we killed enough time on that topic. That's a bad joke. Let's talk a little bit about the Gophers offense. Very frequently what most people want us to talk about is quarterback, because that is the pinnacle of the position in the game of football. I feel like we've talked about Tanner Morgan ad nauseum. So I'm going to give you the option. Do you want to take quarterback first or last?
Let's just talk Tanner now. I like talking about the big uglies up front too, but
yeah,
I mean, Tanner is the polarizing topic among folks, and I get it. And that's where it was even interesting talking with him at Big Ten Media Days last week about just how life has kind of changed for him since coming in 2016 to now being married. How should I feel that Minnesota's quarterback is now married before me, by the way?
I don't think you need to feel anything about that. That kind of like life commitment is very different for different people. So no reason to compare yourself like you compare yourself against all the other beat writers around the country covering the Big Ten.
Look at you, Luke. Someone once told me comparison stealer joy. Not entirely sure.
I don't know where I've heard that before, but yeah. Continue. Say more.
But just kind of hearing his perspective on things. I mean, I had a long sit down with him. You can read the whole thing on Gopher Illustrated. We talked Shiraka versus Mike Sanford. We talked about grieving for his father because now it's been a year getting married, you know, and all the different types of nuances. And it just feels like he's really confident right now. And I guess I would be too if I was going to be a fifth year starting quarterback, because what hasn't he seen at this point? And that's where with Tanner, like you look at last year, completed 59% of his passes, 10 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. And I feel like the casual fan is just going to tell me, well, unless Tanner throws for 30 touchdowns like he did in 2019 with Shiraka, that should be the expectation. It's like, no. Like, this team is still going to be ground and pound with Mo Ibrahim and Trey Potts, but
they were ground and pound in 2019.
Yeah. Again, it was just Tanner found some, in the red zone, or just even with some big plays, they were able to kind of stretch the field vertically. But, like, what if I told you this? If Tanner Morgan in 2022 completed 62% of his passes with 17 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, would you deem that a success or a failure?
I think that is a success. Yes, like I think it's a borderline success, but it's it's success. I guess if you're wanting me to quantify it, do they win the Big Ten or the Big Ten West? Sorry, I want to make sure that's clear. The Big Ten West. I think it's borderline. I think that it's a last game kind of thing. But yeah, I think that's more or less a successful season.
Again, I hate to put like a ton of stock into like quarterback statistics, more or less. Now I say that Big Ten West preview, I talk about how since Graham Mertz came out and was just touchdown Jesus against Illinois in his first start, he's got a negative interception to touchdown ratio. But again, I just think that if Tanner can be somewhere around 2-1 touchdown to interception ratio, whatever that ends up being, I think Minnesota's going to be in a good spot. And yeah. I also say that because he has to throw more. Minnesota knows he has to throw more.
Yes.
Tanner Morgan knows they have to throw more. Like, this is the obvious. This really is. But if he can just stay on schedule and stay in the black and white, which Tanner Morgan, by the way, hates when people say he's a black and white quarterback, which I would argue to him, he is, and he would argue to me, well, everybody would love to be, but when you play the quarterback position, you don't always get to be in the black and white. There's always going to be gray, and it's how do you react to the gray? And I would agree with him, and that's where I think he has potentially struggled at times, but I just think that Tanner, if he can just be consistent, and not have a Bowling Green type of game and not have an Illinois type of game. Now, he's also got to get some help from his offensive line, his pass catchers, play calling, among other things. But if we're even just going to like look big picture, like you just saw Georgia win a championship with Stetson Bennett. Right. No, I don't think Stetson Bennett is going to be an NFL quarterback.
No.
And I'm not saying Tanner Morgan's going to lead Minnesota to the college football playoff. But why can't Tanner Morgan, as a fifth-year starter who has been average the last couple of years, if he can just be above average, lead this team to a Big Ten West title? It's not the craziest thing anybody's ever heard of. He's back with Kirk Ciarca. So, I mean, I think Tanner is completely fine. I don't think Tanner is the big issue. Contrary to what some people may think. Now, does he have the ceiling that maybe an Ethan Kelly-McManus has? Absolutely not. I've said this many times here in the offseason. There is a strong belief in the Gopher football complex that Ethan Kelly-McManus has the chance to finally break Minnesota's quarterback drafted streak.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think goes back to the 70s. I think it might go – I think – was Dungy the last one drafted?
No clue. Not like literally don't have a clue.
I'll look it up here while we're talking. But I mean, that's how highly they think of him. Now, yeah. If Tanner struggles, I don't know what will happen there. I'm not expecting. I don't know that PJ has it in him to move on from Tanner Morgan unless things really, really get bad for Tanner, which I don't think anybody's anticipating. But I also think expectations for Ethan need to be held in check for another year.
Mm-hmm.
He's in year two of being in a collegiate program. And oh, by the way, he just switched quarterback coaches and offensive coordinators, and he's learning some new things. Like, I get lofty expectations for him, 4-star quarterback, the offer list that he had. You've seen it in the spring game. He can do some things athletically that certainly Tanner can't do. But it's just, I think he needs another year. And you also have Cole Kramer there, Jacob Knuth as well, who I expect to redshirt. But I mean, I think that room overall, I think, is in pretty good shape heading into the fall camp season.
Yeah, I think that they've done a good job recruiting. And, you know, it's hard because it's a single position, right? So you can't get playing time for everyone. But they've been able to consistently bring in talent and pretty highly ranked talent recruiting-wise. And eventually, you know, after Tanner, and, you know, injuries are a part of football. Tanner has largely been able to stay healthy. But, you know, it's possible. I feel good, though, about what they have in this room. Does it change the perception if Tanner gets hurt? Yeah, for sure.
Have to go to Cole Kramer, who hasn't started a game before, or Ethan Kelly-McManus, who hasn't started a game before, like, it's going to change things. But I also think for whomever the quarterback is, you've still got your top five pass catchers back from last season. Now, they all dealt with their own stuff that was going on. We'll get to it in a second. But at least you have that returning experience coming back, I would say.
Yeah. Okay, so real quick, the one thing that people often will cite is like, oh, 2019 was an anomaly for Tanner Morgan. If you look at his statistics, you know, there's the gaudy numbers and all the attempts, and, you know, that's an outlier. I guess the more I think about this, Ryan, and this will kind of be a transition into pass catchers for us too, it maybe just skilled players in general. Like, if you think about it, Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman, Chris Ottman Bell, your top three receivers, right? Contrast that with Chris Ottman Bell, Michael Brown Stevens. Can we say, I mean, I know who we want to be, but we have to see the consistency on who that third receiver is going to be. Daniel Jackson, for sure.
How dare you throw dirt on Brevin Spanforth?
Hold on. I didn't get to tight ends yet. Sorry.
I think he's your wide receiver. I mean, I think he's top three target getter.
Okay, that's fair. But Dalen Wright, like, no matter how you slice it, like, 2019, the skill position is just better receiver, right? Like, it's just better and more consistent.
Yes. I don't think anybody's disagreeing with that. I mean, we can go to pass catcher now if you want, and that's where.
But I also wanted to say this too. Do you think Trey Potts Mo Ibrahim is better or worse than Shannon Brooks, Rodney Smith, Mo Ibrahim?
I think it can be in the same tier. And this is where I love to do tiers. Like, I hate to kind of compare
tiers
between tiers.
Yeah.
But I think you have to kind of put them in tiers. I mean, you could even put, you know, Bryce Williams is the third in that tier if you need him to potentially play. But like, you're telling me Mo Ibrahim. Now, again, we're not going to know what we're not going to really know what Mo Ibrahim is until New Mexico State, Western Illinois, and Colorado come through.
Right.
Because while fall camp is open now, I don't think they're going to have him take too many hits, because what do you need Mo Ibrahim to really show you? He's got 500 collegiate carries, mm-hmm. and he's done really well on them. Like, yes, he's got to get hit, but you also want to make sure he's healthy for the season, because I think maybe PJ learned something from Chris Ottman-Bell getting yanked down by a horse collar tackle by the late, great DJ Gordon, who's now somewhere in Florida playing football. But again, I think from what I saw in the spring, from what I've heard from talking to people behind the scenes about Trey Potts and Mo Ibrahim, I think they're both going to be as close to 100% as we're going to see them all season heading into now fall camp, and they're healthy. And I think we've seen Mo be really good. He's Big Ten running back of the year.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Potts be good. I mean, we saw it in that three-game stretch before he went down with that freak injury against Purdue. Like, we've seen them be really good. We've seen Bryce Williams show flashes. We've seen Zach Evans in, you know, the spring game potentially show some flashes. But, I mean, I think they can be in that same tier as the 2019 backs, maybe even a little bit better. If you told me that they're going to stay healthy for 13 games, and you told me that, I mean, you told me, say, Mo Ibrahim got 250 carries and Trey Potts got 150, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would love if that's the case, because that means Mo is only getting 20 carries a game. That means Trey Potts is also getting double-digit touches a game. That's the way it should be. You shouldn't have to learn or lean on a guy now for 25, 30, 35 carries a game. There's no reason to with that running back room.
Yeah. I don't know. If I have to give a nod, I like the tier comparison. I think they're in the same tier. I think I give the nod to the Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, Mo Ibrahim. And Mo,
well,
was,
again,
Mo,
you're
was
talking
a
about a Shannon Brooks that wasn't the 2017 Shannon Brooks at that case.
That's,
and even Rodney, I think it's tough to kind of – it depends what you think of what Trey Potts is and will be in 22.
I just like that they're three completely different styles of backs, right? They're really hard to compare. Like, it's hard to say.
Well, you also remember about that season that none of them were really healthy at the same time.
No, exactly.
Like,
but
one
that's the
was
thing.
Always yes. sort was banged up dealing with something. So we never even really got to see that pair in a spare type of thing.
Yeah, but I guess my point is more like they had the depth, much like you saw last year too. But I don't know. I like the contrasting styles that each could bring. I don't know. I think I just give that nod. And maybe it's just based on the success that we saw in that season is why I give it the nod. But okay, let's talk pass catchers. Wide receiver is interesting because we know what we have in Chris Ottman-Bell. As long as he can stay healthy, he is really good. Is he elite? I don't know. Not really, but he's really good. Like,
it's
he'd
okay
start
to say that Chris Ottman-Bell is a really good college receiver, but he doesn't necessarily have the athletic ceiling that a Tyler Johnson or a Rashad Bateman had.
Yeah.
Like, that's okay. Like,
that's
Chris
okay.
Ottman-Bell
yeah.
can be like a second, third team, if things break right for him, all Big Ten wide receiver, and I would argue he's had a fantastic college career, and he can put an exclamation point on it this fall, but like, Chris Ottman-Bell is going to need somebody to help.
Yeah, and there's a reason he came back, right? Like, he wants to put better film on, but, this is probably his best chance to keep playing football. But yes, they need someone behind him, and I think that's the big kind of scary question mark. Would you agree with me that Michael Brown-Stevens is probably the most consistent last year of the other wide receivers that are returning this year?
Did you read my pieces this spring?
No, I haven't.
Where I interviewed Matt Simon, the receivers coach, and then PJ Fleck.
No, I haven't.
Because they said that same thing. They thought he was the most consistent last year.
Yeah,
and I would probably agree. Now, I would also say he was the one that was most consistently available.
That's fair.
And that's where the best ability in football is availability.
Yeah, that's fair.
So While Dalen Wright dealt with some personal things off the field with the death of his best friend, mm-hmm. Daniel Jackson was banged up, had some things off the field. Brevin Spanford missed a little bit of time.
There was more. I'm not trying to belittle the fact that Dalen Wright, you know, lost his best friend. But even before that, like, he wasn't consistently getting the playing time. There was something going on there that, you know, we don't know, but he wasn't getting that playing time. And so there's something, like, they keep saying he needed to mature, and it sounds like he's doing that, or he needed to be more consistent. I can't remember the exact language that they used.
I think it was a culmination of things, but the more I've kind of went into it here in the offseason and asked around, like, he wasn't around the team for some time, in the middle of the season, because he was trying to get his head on straight. And then it's not exactly like you can get him right back and in practice and immediately throw him out there after mm-hmm. he hasn't been there. And so that's where, when you even talk about Chris Ottman-Bell, like, there is no doubting. Like, you talk to anybody in that receiver room, you talk to anybody at that complex, Dalen Wright has the highest ceiling of anyone not named Ariante Ursary on this offense in terms of an NFL potential.
Sure.
He does. Now,
I don't know.
Does he have a long way to go to reach there? Absolutely he does. But that's where he does things, and you saw it against Ohio State, you saw it against Wisconsin at times, where he can just change the game. And that's where, if you told me that, you know, here's the over-under for you with Dalen Wright this year. Dalen Wright last fall played 25% of Minnesota's receiver snaps. If you told me that he played over 50% of the snaps this fall, I'd say Minnesota's passing offense is going to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And now, pretty good by Big Ten West standards isn't exactly the 98 greatest show on turf.
Yeah.
We all can acknowledge that, but Dalen Wright just needs to be on the field. Yeah. And that's where from talking with PJ at Big Ten Media Days, I asked him directly that question was, has Dalen Wright done what he needed to do? And that's putting the time off the field, and he has. And that's where I hear what you say, and I trust what you do. So I hear Flex say that. Now I trust what is going to happen in games, but if he can be the vertical threat, if Chris Ottman-Bell can be the Tyler Johnson version and Dalen Wright can take up the top off the defense like Rashad Bateman did in 19, and then you can have complementary guys like Daniel Jackson, Michael Brown Stevens, and Brevin Spanford be your Demetrius Douglas type of guy, amongst others. And there's going to be there are viable options in this offense. That's the exciting part about it. But the scary part about it is there really isn't a lot of depth there. Because what happens if two of the five guys we just mentioned are hurt? Are you going to go to Clay Geary?
Yeah,
are you going to go to Ike White, Lameki Brockington? Kristen Hoskins is a true freshman? I don't know. So that's where if there was a position group that needs to stay healthy, to me, it's these pass catchers.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Let's go back and do just a quick comp. In 2019, again, this is kind of the last comparable we can have with Shiraka. You're at wide receiver. You have Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman, both of which eclipse 1,000 yards receiving, right? Johnson has 86 receptions. Bateman has 60. Dalen Wright gets 50 catches this year. Chris Ottman-Bell gets 65, let's call it.
If that's the case, your pants are going to be off because you're going to be going to Indianapolis.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. I think that is, like, that tells you that they have a chance to win the West. You have to be somewhere in there, like, between those two. They have to have over 100 catches.
If you told me that, I would even take it a step further. If you told me that Chris Ottman-Bell and Dalen Wright and then Brevin Spanford, and I know there's some people on this podcast who cannot stand. Look, I've been 2 years too early on Brevin Spanford for like 3 years. I get it. I know people are tired of hearing his name. But, you know, I've thrown this around to some people around the complex. Is Brevin Spanford has 28 career collegiate catches. And I've told some folks at the complex he should at least double that. You know, he should catch 30-something balls this year. And they're like, yeah, he should. And it's like, okay, well, are you actually going to go out and like scheme him the ball?
Yeah.
And that's where there is no reason. And you saw it in November where he had multiple catches in every game. There's no reason why Brevin Spanford shouldn't have five targets a game.
Yeah.
And if you have five targets a game for 13 games, look, my University of Minnesota math isn't what it used to be, or my Calc 4 / former actuarial science, but roughly tells me somewhere around 65 targets, and you'd hope he would catch at least half. Like, he has the athletic abilities to be a game, the best game-changing tight end in the past game since Max Williams. It's just about getting him the ball. And so that's where, again, to me, it seems pretty clear. Your top three target guys this fall should be Chris Ottman-Bell, Dalen Wright, Brevin Spanford, in whatever order you want to put them in. You have Daniel Jackson and Michael Brown Stevens to be complimentary guys. And then hopefully you're able to, you know, give the Ike Whites and the Lameke Brockingtons and the Kristen Hoskins a year to season beneath them. But that's the beauty, I think, here of having five guys, Luke, that have all played. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of these guys got their feet wet last year for the first time, and the Dalen Wrights and the Michael Brown Stevenses and the Daniel Jacksons, but now it's time to go do it. Mm-hmm. There is no more excuse of you're green, you're inexperienced. You need to take what you learned from 2021 and you need to apply it and help your quarterback in 2022.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you on that. You just need to stay healthy, and you need to actually commit to throwing the football. You have to be more balanced. I'm not saying that you have to throw 50-50, but you have to be able to be more balanced.
Well, it's funny because that was the question I asked when the camera was on it at Big Ten Media Days, was how does PJ Fleck define balance? And that's where, if you're watching, you saw that, yes, I do indeed have a face for radio like you all thought, in case you want to see what I actually look like. But I thought PJ answered it in the most PJ way, where I know people get really frustrated at times, and we certainly have on this podcast, about their just overwhelming commitment to the run, where it's nauseating at times when just seemingly you could open things up through the air. And it's, they're going to do whatever it means that week to win the game. If it means throwing the ball 40 times, they're going to do it. If it means throwing the ball 15 times, they're going to do it. And Tanner Morgan even said the same when I asked him about what does balance mean. But to that point, like, you need to be able to throw the ball. And that's where the late, great Edina Hornets former junior varsity captain, Justin Guard, for the basketball team there, brought up to this point to me while we were sitting at the airport in Indianapolis, that now here's the theory, Luke. Are you ready for this? And I think I agree with Mr. Guard.
All right, I'm listening.
One of the big reasons I think Kirk Sharaka, you should be excited he's back, is he's not afraid to maybe tell the head coach how it is, and he's not afraid to stand up to the head coach because maybe he's got some equity with him.
Yeah.
And maybe when the head coach gets a little nervous and says, we need to run the ball, maybe Kirk just turns to him and we are where Sanford said, yeah, sure, whatever, whatever you need, coach. Sharaka looks at him and says,
you know, you're crazy.
Screw you. This is what we're doing. I'm the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And we need to keep throwing the ball. We're going to keep throwing the ball. If you knew Kirk, by the way, that totally checks out. And I mean that in the sincerest way for Kirk Sharaka.
Yeah. I hear that. But I've also watched all these games with my two eyes and two contact lenses. And I'm going to tell you, man, especially in the non-conference, their commitment to being risk averse and working inside zone.
It totally screwed them last year.
Yes, it no finally
the
bit
Bowling up. Green fiasco.
Yes.
And we can argue even in 2019, Luke.
Oh, yeah.
For the Georgia Southerns and the Southern South Dakota States of the world. Oh, absolutely.
But Fresno State as well, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I just, and I'm sure it'll be that way when they're, you know, they're a 38-point home favorite, which is, can you imagine taking Minnesota minus 38, even if it is against a New Mexico State team on a short week at home? I can't even imagine.
I wouldn't bet your mortgage on that. So
heaven forbid your mortgage, Mr.
Hold on. I will never forget. Okay. I was in Seattle driving around with my grandma. Washington was playing. I think this was 2001. I was playing Miami, and
Washington was a 28 or 29 point underdog. And then some guy called in the sports radio, said he's betting his mortgage that the Huskies will cover. Guess what? The Huskies lost by like 40. So they nailed that one. I've heard crazier things. But all right. So have we covered pass catchers? Do we need to touch on anything tight end? Who is our co-Keefe replacement is what I want to know. Who is going to be that blocking tight end? Not saying that
get to know Wyzetta's own. Yeah. Get to know Wyzetta's own Nick Hallerup, someone that is, definitely has the facial hair of co-Keefe. He's got the mentality of co-Keefe, very big, strong kid. Again, he's developing as a pass catcher. He's certainly no Brevin Spanford. But if you need him to go knock somebody around, I think Nick Hallerup can do that. Now, do I expect him to be the Pro Football Focus's best run-blocking tight end in the Big Ten like co-Keefe was? No. But if he can give you some viable options there in terms of even just being an above-average run blocker, which I think he's definitely capable of doing, he can be a good complement to what Spanford can provide.
All right. I'm just thinking about the claims we made on the number of listens earlier in the episode. And I think that number probably shrinks now that Coe's family doesn't listen anymore.
I also think it shrunk immediately once I mentioned Brevin Spanford's name, because people just don't believe me at this point. Yeah. And to be fair, I get it. I do. I get it.
Yeah. All right. Let's transition. Let's talk a little bit of running game. Let's save running back for last. Let's talk about the offensive line. I kind of want to draw parallels to 2019 again. I know I've been doing this a lot, and I'm not trying to argue that we're going to see the same success. I'm not trying to make that.
If you're arguing that they're going to win 10 regular season games, I will remind you that the Vegas line, very widely available right now, is 7.5. No, I would take the over, but I'm not telling you it's going to be 10.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Here's the thing, though. Think about 2019. They're a pretty young offensive line, right? Like, I think at that point, Fa'alele wasn't starting to start the year, and he came partway through the season, if memory serves. Did they end up sitting Schluter then?
You're thinking of the 2018 season where Schluter I think it was Van Valkenburg who just decapitated him in the Iowa game.
So 2019, but like you've got a bunch of guys that had some experience, but not a ton.
Yeah, it was like Sam Schluter shifting from right tackle to left tackle for the first time. Blaze Andrews getting his feet wet. You had Curtis Dunlap getting his feet wet. Daniel Fa'alele really getting going there. I mean, I get the comparisons you're making, and
who was the center that year? It was Connor Olson, right?
For a period of time, I think John Michael started to get in there a little bit. I'd have to look back.
I'd have to look back too, but. All I'm trying to say is, like, you know, barring injury, like, John Michael Schmitz is a clear upgrade at whatever they had. I know there are question marks around this year, but you do have some experience. The kid from Hutchinson, whose name currently is escaping me.
Holy family, but yeah.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. But, you know.
Yes. John Michael started 4 games that year.
Yeah. Okay. So
it was like him and Connor Olson at center.
Yeah. But what is the guard from Hutchinson? What's his name? I'm totally blanking.
Guard from Hutchinson, Luke.
For this season,
there is no guard from Hutchinson. You're thinking of Axel Rushmeyer.
Yeah, Axel Rushmeyer. Well, whatever. It's out west.
So you are going to get some very angry people with you.
Why did I think he was from Hutchinson?
I don't know. Totally are you thinking of their 23 linebacker commit, Alex Elliott from Hutchinson?
I don't know.
But I think to your point that you're trying to make, you know, kind of comparing and contrasting the 19 to 22 where they were inexperienced, that's where I would say I think the interesting thing to kind of note here is they may be inexperienced, but they're a lot older than what that 2019 offensive line was, where you were starting a bunch of guys who were like 20-ish.
Mm-hmm.
You have John Michael Schmitz at center, who is the best center Minnesota's had since Greg Eschlinger and is a legitimate Remington candidate. But alongside of him are 2 sixth-year guys. We're not talking about Blaze Andrews in year 2 or 3 or Connor Olson in year 3 or Curtis Dunlap in year 1 or 2. We're talking about Axel Rushmeyer as like a 24-year-old grown man.
By the way, I looked it up. He's from, his hometown is Hutchinson, Minnesota. So I'm not that crazy. Yes, he went to Holy Family Catholic, but he's from Hutchinson, Minnesota. Thank you.
Do you feel vindicated now?
I feel better.
That's good. Well, you also got Chuck Filiaga potentially on the right side of him, who is a sixth-year graduate transfer from Michigan. He's played some time. I mean, I would argue that the right tackle position, we can get into it, but it's not like you're starting a bunch of teenagers or 20-year-olds that 2019 was. I would tell you that I mentioned his name earlier, but this staff, and Fleck did it again at Big Ten Media Days, and I really hope Ariante is ready for it. I mean, he made the statement, PJ did, that Ariante's got as high of a ceiling as anyone Brian Callahan's ever coached. Now, if you don't know this, Brian Callahan had two day two picks at Western Michigan and Taylor Moten. And I'm not going to try and pronounce the other guy's name. All I know is they call him Chook. I think he's got a second contract from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Didn't he have Willie Beavers too or something like that?
Yeah, he somehow convinced the Minnesota Vikings that Willie Beavers was worth a fourth round pick.
Yeah.
My point being, they think Ariante Irisarri has top 45 overall NFL upside.
He flashed in limited snaps. Well,
he's only started one game, and that was in 2020. So no pressure, young man. But I think he's going to be an upgrade at left tackle. From what I saw in the spring, from what the people who have gone against him have said, again, I think there's going to be some lumps early on as he adjusts to actually being the guy and protecting the blind side of Tanner Morgan or whoever the quarterback is. But I think he's an upgrade over what Sam Schluter was at left tackle. I think that my concerns with Axel Rushmeyer are in pass protection, which I would argue that maybe the left guard's issue last year was pass protection as well. But I think John Michael obviously being back helps. We'll see what Chuck Filiaga can provide. But I'm also not ruling out that who's to say Notre Dame's and Edina's own Quinn Carroll doesn't get a shot at right guard here in fall camp. I would be shocked if he didn't, because why wouldn't you try to put him against Chuck Filiaga at right guard along with JJ Gaudet at right tackle? Like, why wouldn't you? Like, because whoever of the three guys on the right side of the line there, between Chuck Filiaga, the Michigan transfer, Quinn Carroll, the Notre Dame transfer, and then JJ Gaudet, who is healthy to start his fourth year now, whoever doesn't win a starting spot is just going to be the sixth offensive lineman to me. That's a package that is not going away. I think
you really think so?
Of potentially some people, but like, I need to see that Quinn Carroll can have the foot speed and athleticism to be a tackle in the Big Ten.
Sure.
Because if he can't, there's no shame in moving him into guard, because I think Minnesota can use some guard help. Now, obviously, Gaudet's got to prove that, number one, he can stay healthy, and number two, that he's ready in his fourth year, which strength-wise, he absolutely should be. But, you know, right tackle is just the position that I'm sitting here stroking my beard saying, if there's going to be an issue early in the season, I think it's going to be from that right side of the offensive line.
Yeah, I hear you. I think my biggest concern, you know, last season, obviously run blocking was a strength, right? It's hard to evaluate as well because they ran the ball so much they became pretty predictable. But then even when you'd go play action or something, they weren't great in pass protection. So I'm curious to see if this group is improved on that. You know,
stunts and twists. Yes, I swear to God, for like the ninth straight September, if stunts and twists give Brian Callahan's offensive line issues, I'm going to not be happy.
Yeah, that's my concern as well. But that's a continuing trend. But you know, this is largely a remade offensive line. They filled some gaps in the transfer market. Yeah, I mean, I'm interested. I think, like, given all the turnover, I'm not as pessimistic as like one might expect, right?
Well, you lose four guys who started a ton of games for Minnesota, a ton of games. But I think the reason you're feeling that way is because the same reason I'm feeling that way. It's because This is what a Big Ten West program should look like in year six. Mm-hmm. You should be starting guys who are all of the legal drinking age, or at least dang near close to it, in the case of Ariante Irsary. And he's the exception because they think so highly of him. Like Gide, Quinn Carroll, Chuck Filiaga, John Michael, Axel Rushmeyer, they've been able to drink for some time now. Like Quinn Carroll has a degree from Notre Dame already. So this isn't like you're throwing out teenagers anymore like we saw in 16 and 17, and they're just going to – you're going to have to take your lumps. There should be no, in theory, taking a ton of lumps like some of the – maybe those younger guys are going to do. But that's where it's going to be on Brian Callahan to get this offensive line just working together. Because, yes, John Michael returns, but he's got two brand-new guys to his right and left, and the same thing goes for the tackles. So it's going to be about spending September in those first three games, the non-conference, really just working on communication up front, because I can assure you Mel Tucker's defense is going to be ready to go by the time game four comes around, but they have to get communication down up front. I think our good friend Derek Burns would tell you that is incredibly important mm-hmm. for the Minnesota Brewing Company.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about running back. This is such a weird conversation because if you look at last season, you would say like, well, they're losing a lot. Well, they lost a lot all season last season. Mo Ibrahim starts the year, has a phenomenal game against Ohio State, tore his Achilles, gone. Trey Potts has a really good run for a number of games, out with an injury as well for the remainder of the season, didn't play again. And then you play two freshmen who happened to transfer. Kai Thomas.
Bryce Williams comes in. Yeah. He does a good job point. Against yes. Nebraska, puts right. the game away, and then he dies against Northwestern. I've jokingly said this, but honest to God, Luke, whoever the angry running back god was who just smited that Kenny Burns running back room last yeah. year, I really hope he's not around for a second. Well, I hope he moved on to some other random team.
Let's not forget that the other running back that transferred midseason,
Cam Wiley.
That's it, Wiley. I couldn't get his last name. And he got a couple of carries, but you know, I mean, the transfer was good for him.
It's a very different looking room now. Yes. You look at this room this time. Like, if we were to go back in time to say August 2nd of 2021, we knew what it was going to look like in 22. We'd be like, what do you mean? But so much happened in terms of injuries, in terms of guys leaving, in terms of different storylines that went on there. But that's where this entire thing comes down to. What do you think health-wise of Mohamed Ibrahim and Treyson Potts? Mm-hmm. Now, I think they're healthy. I've been told they're healthy. Fleck told me they're healthy. Kenny Burns told me they're healthy. Sources around the U told me they're healthy. And that's where I keep coming back to with Mo. Yes, an Achilles injury is incredibly devastating for a lot of skill position players. Mm-hmm. But my question to you would be this. You've seen a lot of Mo Ibrahim like I have. I've made some terrible Mo Ibrahim statements early in my life. And I think I've learned to the point where, what's the difference if Mo Ibrahim this time last year pre-Achilles was running like a 4.75 40, and now he runs a 4.8? Is that really going to change my opinion of what Mo Ibrahim does well or can be as a Big Ten running back?
I mean, his value is his vision, right?
So his value is his vision. His value is running through contact. His value is, you know, keeping mm-hmm. his legs going and pushing the pile. You know, that's where Mo, it's not like it's just a one cut and go like, say, Cam Wiley, where it's his entire game was predicated on one cut and speed. It's not Mo Ibrahim. Mm-hmm. And that's where, even with Treyson Potts and his injury, like, what happened is going to have nothing to do with, you know, his physical extremities, I guess I would say. Like, this wasn't an ACL. This wasn't an ankle. This wasn't a calf. I think he's added about 5-7 pounds of muscle. We saw what he could do in that 3-4 game stretch when Mo went down. I thought he showed he was a pretty good back. Mm-hmm. So that's where I said to open this podcast, I would take Mo Ibrahim and Treyson Potts against Ches Malusi and Braylon Allen as the top duo in the Big Ten West. I think you could make maybe an argument for Illinois with Chase Brown and Josh McCray as a 1-2 back, but I also think Chase Brown is incredibly underrated from Illinois there. And I hope we don't have to see that when Minnesota travels to Champaign too much. But I just think it comes down to what you think, because you even have Bryce Williams coming back off a broken leg. You know, he's probably your running back three. I think Zach Evans showed enough in the spring and here in the summer that I think Kenny Burns feels comfortable with him as your running back four. And then you've also got Preston Jelen coming back off injury. I mean, I just think that...
Don't discount Derek LeCaptain, please.
I'm discounting him because he hasn't been a running back since about December 31st.
I'm just saying the man averaged 10.3 yards per carry, Ryan.
How dare I?
How dare you?
How dare I? But that's where I just come back to between Mo Ibrahim's north-south and Trey's Potts east-west and whatever you need to get out of a Bryce Williams or a Zach Evans or a Preston Jelen. I think Kenny Burns has showed, especially after getting down to running back five and six last year, that whomever is going to be in the game, and I really hope it's just those top two guys. Like I said, I would love for Mo Ibrahim to be somewhere on 225 touches at the end of the year. I mean, that tells me he gets somewhere around 20 carries a game. Trayson Potts gets somewhere between 10 and 12 or 15, whatever it may be for that specific game. Like, keep both guys fresh so that when you go into that final gauntlet of games in November and you end the season with Iowa and Wisconsin with the West on the line again, those two are ready to go. And we don't see the Braylon Allen experience where I'm glad Minnesota gets Braylon Allen in Thanksgiving weekend and not Labor Day weekend after he's gotten 250-something carries on that body again.
Yeah.
So keep him fresh.
Yeah. Let's I think we're missing one major thing in the running game. That being the Wildcat. This is something they featured for years and years. And this last year, Cole Kramer had 36 carries, 4.6 yards per carry. You know, he was much more of a passing threat than Seth Green was, even though Seth Green had some successful throws in there too. I'm curious to see if they continue to bring that back. I suspect they will, because even without Seth Green last year, as he had transferred and went on to Houston, you know, they made this a feature part of their offense. I suspect that this will still be Cole Kramer's gig, you know, to own. I mean, Cali Kmanis could probably do it, but I suspect it'll be
Cole. I would just rather Ethan learn the offense and maybe be the true quarterback backup where Cole can be in a pinch, say mid-game if something happens, that Tanner would need to leave. You can throw Cole in there. But if it's a long-term thing, you give it to Ethan. But I would love for Cole to continue to focus on that niche role for him.
Yeah.
So I think he's one of the most athletic guys on the offense. He is. He's not the biggest guy in the world in terms of stature, like Seth Green might have been, but I think he showed last year he can be an efficient runner there as a Wildcat quarterback. But again, I'm not incredibly worried about whomever is running the ball, whether it's Ibrahim, Potts, Kramer, or even Bryce Williams. I'm not too incredibly worried about that.
Yeah. Okay. Let's just talk generally about the offense. I think we hit all the position groups. I tried to go through them in my mind. Did I miss any, Ryan?
No, and that's where I guess the final thoughts I would say about the offense is there's no excuse for it to be as bad as it was in terms of a passing game last year.
Yes.
There's no excuse for that to happen in consecutive years with a fifth-year starting quarterback, an offensive coordinator who had worked with that quarterback for three previous seasons at one point in his career. You get back the Big Ten running back of the year. You get back Trayson Potts, who – showed really well in his 3-4 game sample. You get back your top five pass catchers and you're starting guys on the offensive line who are of the legal drinking age. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking for this to be the 2019 prolific offense where they're just touchdown, 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 touchdown. But if this can just be, I could make the argument, if this is just even an above average offense, you're going to be the second best offense in the division, not named Purdue.
Yeah.
Now, and Purdue can only pass the ball because they refuse to run it. But if you can find some resemblance of balance, and again, I hate to put a number on it. I hate to say it's 50-50 run pass because that's stupid. That's never going to be the PJ Fleck way. Not here. Mm-hmm. But if you can run the ball 40 times and throw it 25, I mean, that means you're throwing the ball somewhere around – Oh man, 300 something times if over a 12 games, 13 game sample. It's a lot more than they did last year. So just find whatever works for you, and not, and if you can't trust your fifth year starting quarterback to throw the ball, why is he out there throwing? Like, you have to trust Tanner and these pass catchers, because there's no excuse why this passing game can't at least be viable here in the West.
Yeah, I totally hear you on that. All right, I'm going to just throw you just a couple of stats here, and you tell me if they make or exceed this, do the Gophers win or lose the Big Ten West? And I get this is kind of foolish because, you know, injuries are going to play a big part. They always do.
In like how you want to do this like a month in advance already.
I know, but it's just kind of fun.
Do I think they win or lose the West?
I know you're already on the record as saying that they win the West, but I want to look at some numbers. So the Gophers score on average per game 28 points per game. Do they win or lose the West?
They would win the West. That would be, they would score. I mean, I'm expecting like Wisconsin's offense to put up like in Big Ten play somewhere in like 20 to 23. Mm-hmm. Same thing kind of goes for Iowa. Now, again, those games just come down to who can actually throw the ball a little bit. So that's where Iowa beat Minnesota last year with those explosive plays in the passing game. Minnesota made enough explosive plays with like the Chris Ottman Bell touchdown last year to win it. If Minnesota scoring 28 points a game in the Big Ten, I would feel pretty good about that.
All right. The Gophers find a way to exceed 45% on third down efficiency.
What are these stats, Luke?
I think I
don't even trying to pull up what they were last year to have some context here.
I really was frustrated because I always felt like even given like a lot of third and short situations, the Gophers were pretty good, but they found themselves in a lot of third and long situations, which made their third down efficiency drop. So that's why I've been looking at like third down efficiency. The highest it's been that I can remember in the Fleck era was 48% in the 2019 season. But
I mean, I would love to. I think it's a good line. I don't know that I would take either side of it.
All right. That's fair. Okay. Total touchdowns receiving, the Gophers exceed 20 touchdowns.
Under. I think if Tanner can just throw somewhere between 16 and 19 and then keep the interceptions,
and they can still win the West.
6-8. Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to get away from Mo Ibrahim and Tracy Potts in the red zone.
I hear that. I think the thing that we have to touch on that we haven't yet, and this isn't a question for you, is like just explosive plays, right? This is where they really struggled outside of, you know, Michael Brown, Steven, or some really big runs, like consistent explosive plays and manufacturing those. We know the last time that Kirk Ciarocco was here, like one, the skill was better, but also they were able to find ways to put guys in positions to manufacture touchdowns. Like I think of that Bateman touch, that was it his first touchdown in the Penn State game? Maybe he didn't score two, I don't remember, but the one where they ran the little wheel there. The wheel route kind of thing, where it was like, okay, they 100% schemed that based on pre-snap read, right? That's the sort of thing where like I feel more confident that they can scheme with Kirk Ciarocco to manufacture some explosive plays, but they also need to find a way to just have guys that can just make them naturally. I think Dalen Wright is the obvious one that can make that happen, but they need someone besides him.
Better job of getting guys in space. Minnesota was dead last in the West in yards after the catch last year, and that's inexcusable. And I brought up that stat to Kirk Ciarocco this spring, and he didn't know it. In terms of, he's like, I don't really look at that stat, but what I can tell you is we need to become a much more explosive passing game, which every Gopher fan shouts to the heavens. And they do, you're right. It's the vertical passing. If you're going to be a run dominant team like Minnesota is, you better be able to stretch the field vertically, or else the people are just going to stack the box. And that's where you're going to have to be able to win some one-on-ones. I know that Chris Ottman-Bell from iMoney is arguably the best contested catch winner as a wide receiver that I've seen in my 12 years now on the beat. He's really good at that. But we need to see someone else emerge and be that vertical threat. I'd love to tell you it's going to be Dalen Wright. I think he's capable of doing it. I'd love to tell you it's Michael Brown-Stevens. I'd argue he's one of the fastest on the team, and he can get behind the defense. But we need to see someone do it consistently. And that's to your point. Who is that going to be? Mm-hmm. But also to your point, I think they need to do a much better job scheming guys to be able to catch the ball and run. Get them in space and let them use their athletic abilities and not have everything be such a contested catch situation.
Not just that, but catch and go out of bounds, or catch and, you know, you immediately have nowhere to go, right? That's the piece, or make a guy miss. That's the piece that I think they really lacked the last couple of years, or the last.
Yeah, and again, that's where Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman were so good at that. Or even in that season, you saw Demetrius Douglas do it at times.
Yes, that's a good point.
They need to have someone be able to do that to complement Chris Ottman-Bell.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. One last question for you: a wild card name that no one's talking about, but maybe through injury or something, could play a big role on this offense this year. You maybe didn't even mention him. I my assumption is it's the running back from Texas, right? That's a freshman.
Yeah, if there's a running back injury that goes down, I would love to see Zach Evans get a chance. I would love to see Kristen Hoskins potentially get a chance in the return game, considering we know how sad that is. Return game has been for many years now.
Mm-hmm.
I would say if Lemeke Brockington's healthy, I would love to see him get a chance, because mm-hmm. I think he's shown flashes. But yeah, I think I would just go with the younger guys. But to that same breath, I really hope we don't see Zach Evans. I really hope we don't see Kristen Hoskins, mm-hmm. because if we're seeing them, that means there are injuries in front of them, and it's going to be tough to kind of try to put a freshman in the shoes of and expect them to perform.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think that'll do it for this 2022 preview of the Gopher offense. It is early. A lot's going to change, but we appreciate you listening. If you want to advertise on our podcast, reach out, let us know. It's going to be,
you can email me, slide into the DMs, email Luke, whatever it may be.
Ryan's got to finance a wedding, people. Like, let's make it happen. Let's get Ryan on like a real sweet honeymoon or something. Come on, guys.
Yeah. So we got that going. We'll be back next week to talk about the Gopher defense. The plan is the week after that, we're going to get Daniel House on the podcast, have him kind of talk you through some things about what we've seen at the fall camp practices. We're going to do a lot of over-under type of things, kind of compare and contrast where Daniel and I are at, do maybe look back on that NFL draft that we did last year on the pod with him.
The draft we did, I looked it up the other day, Ryan. It was actually who would get Big Ten honors. And I think we have to reanalyze that and see who actually won.
I think we will. Week after that, we'll do our season preview game by game. And then it's going to be New Mexico State week before you know it. So we're back weekly in your lives. And then once the season starts, we're going to be bi-weekly preview and then post with Derek Burns again, as far as I've heard. So it is the time of year where you get to hear the haunting tones of my voice and Luke Buehr's, but we couldn't be more excited about this 2022 Gopher football season. Right.
Yeah, again, thank you all for listening. It's going to be a fun ride. Win or lose, rain or shine, it's going to be fun. All right, thanks for listening. Go Gophers.